This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
I did say it was the summer solstice, Macca, at the last break, and I've done my research.
Oh, yes.
At 12:42 today. Mm-hmm. We are the furthest away from the sun, and there we will start to get closer to the sun after 12:42 at lunchtime. There you go.
Well, I'll make sure that I've got my seatbelt on.
I haven't got exactly the amount of time it's going to take to get us warmed back up again, but the long winter days have drawn to an end, and today will be sunny. And our next guest on the line is
Peter Khalil, the member for Wills. And earlier I nearly called you Peter Wills, the member for Khalil.
Well, thank you. Paul, you're such a half-glass full person. I love the fact that you're thinking at the end of winter is at the solstice, because it is so cold right now.
It's particularly in Canberra. We heard it was -7 in Canberra this morning. But yeah, the days are going to get longer. I don't think it's going to get any warmer for a bit, but at least the days will get slightly longer.
Well, just on the title that you were sort of...
Oh, yes. What is your title, Peter?
Well, my 10-year-old daughter really brought home the reality that I am the Assistant Minister for Defence. She asked me how my first trip was, and I went to Western Australia where they, you know, Top Gun, the movie, where we train our, we got a base there where we train our fighter jet pilot training centre. And so I said, oh, yeah, I took the PM's plane and I came down on the tarmac and the military saluted me. She's like, why'd they do that? I said, oh, because I have to salute the Minister for Defence. And she said, Dad, settle down, you're just a deputy minister.
he really brought
it home.
there's always the people back at the house that tell you how it really is.
Yes, yes.
Do they call them Top Guns in the school over in Perth?
No, that was just me because I watched the movie when I was a kid.
You could have said yes.
Pretty impressive that they do.
We had an earlier guest, Peter. I don't know whether you heard Jennifer Parker. She's Naval Studies, University of New South Wales.
An adjunct fellow,
right? And an expert associate.
You got that title right, didn't you?
I did. Okay. I had to be really careful. And we talked about AUKUS, but also how important that is and why the South China Sea is important. Now, I don't expect you to be able to say exactly what state the AUKUS discussions are with, but let's talk about in our region why the Americans and the UK and potentially NATO are so interested in this region.
Well, I think the short answer to this is that in the Indo-Pacific is now, for the 21st century, going to be pivotal in importance, because this region is where, you know, global security, stability is going to be based, because it is so much trade, so many billions of people live in this region, and the way that we shape, and Australia plays a role in shaping the international normative framework, the international rules of the road for both security and for trade, will have a huge impact on the kind of world that we're going to be living in for generations into the 21st century. And for our perspective, from an Australian perspective, we, in our national interest, we are a trading nation. We can't force issues by the use of force or get our objectives through the use of force. We want people to abide and countries to abide by international law. And so the international security framework, the trade laws, which are the sort of basis of our prosperity, frankly, and the basis of stability in the region, are critically important. And defence, in that respect, where you're talking about building up capabilities, when you build up capabilities in defence, you're not doing it to go to war. It's to avoid conflict. It's to provide a deterrent effect. So the countries think, well, hold on, it's too costly to go to fight and use our military forces to reach our objectives. We've got to go back to the diplomatic table and sort things out through diplomacy. And that is the basis of capability and kind of underpins the principles or the understanding of why AUKUS, which is a trilateral security and technology exchange, is important for us, because it builds up our capacity, our capability to deter adversaries from using military force. to reach their objectives.
You know,
as quickly as I can do it in 1 minute.
That was set ago many decades ago by Lee Kuan Yew in Singapore when he said defence and everything was so important because it made Singapore a poison prawn that no one would swallow.
Yeah, and there's theories about us being the echidna.
Yes.
That no one wants to sort of bother. But
you know what echidnas do? They eat roots and leaf.
But do they? Oh, okay. That's very good. I didn't know that. But the point I was going to make is we don't, when this whole debate about spending on defence, in World War II, I don't know if either of you know what did we spend as a percentage of GDP on defence?
Oh, come on, Peter, tell us. Was it down to 2% or 3%?
No, I guess.
I think it would have been higher, but we're also one of the countries that ended the Second World War that the Americans owed us money.
Yes, well, we spent 38% of our GDP.
Yeah,
wow.
So
wow.
This is something we want to avoid. We want to avoid conflict. We want to avoid war. So your investment in defence spending and capability that provides a deterrent effect is actually an investment in peace in the long term.
So, Peter, we were talking about the next meeting of NATO and how important that's going to be and the fact that Albanese is not going, Miles is going. Shouldn't we have our top guy there? If it's going to be that important, then we need to rebuild those relationships back up with NATO to get the the right relationships.
I think the PM did go to the very important meeting of the G7 leaders, all of those leaders, and particularly important for the Indo-Pacific. NATO, we have a sort of a special observer status at NATO, and the discussions around defence and defence issues and that kind of thing, I think is entirely appropriate for the Deputy Prime Minister to be involved in those. In fact, he has been involved many times over the last couple of years. So, you know, the G7 was really important because it really, you saw the kind of international community come in a consistent position, particularly around all the conflicts that we're seeing, the need to go back to diplomacy and dialogue to try and end conflict. We don't want to see an escalation of what's happening in the war with Israel and Iran. You saw that kind of position put very clearly by most of the leaders there at the G7, including our Prime Minister. And so, you know, these are important meetings for Australia. The really important one that the Prime Minister just attended had some critical outcomes, I think, for us as well, for our region. It's a volatile world at the moment. We are living in a volatile environment. It's uncertain. It's unpredictable. I think it's so important that Australia obviously plays its role as a good international citizen, but also plays its role to ensure the stability and the security of our region. And both the Prime Minister and Deputy Prime Minister are doing that job for Australia at the moment.
Now you're Assistant Minister for Defence, or as your daughter says, your deputy minister.
Yeah. Just the deputy.
Just the deputy. What's the most, and I know, you know, these are areas of interest for you for a very, very long time, you know, defence and security and other matters. But now that you're an Assistant Minister, what is the thing that has surprised you the most about the portfolio?
I think the ADF, the Australian Defence Forces, the men and women who are in the ADF, the work they do is so, so wide and varied. I mean, people just have this kind of cliche about, you know, the military, but I went up to Taree to see the ADF, to meet with the ADF deployment and work through what they needed up there with respect to the flood zones that we were seeing and the disaster relief that the ADF personnel were doing to support people in duress, life-saving stuff, you know, helicoptering out people who are in trouble and so on. The humanitarian assistance that we do across the Pacific region, you know, really important work that we do with our partners in the region to provide support for those countries and those peoples in the region. The peacekeeping work that our men and women do in lots of flashpoints around the world. Not many people know about that, the peacekeeping work that we do, that they do in the Middle East, in Korea, the demilitarized zone. So there's a lot of work that the ADF does, which is of critical importance to, you know, towards that goal of providing stability and security for peoples across the globe and particularly in our region. And that didn't surprise me, but the breadth of it, I think, when I got all the incoming briefs was like really interesting to see how much we're doing and how important it is.
Have you driven a tank yet?
No, don't.
I want to see a picture of your head popping out the top of a tank.
No, I won't be doing that.
And Peter, another technical question. Just, you obviously have got a work to represent your members here in the state. How do you actually balance off the work you do as an assistant minister versus the work you have to do for your constituents?
As an MP, yeah.
Oh, Paul, that is a perennial question for the Westminster democratic system, because all of the ministers, like in the UK and in Australia, the Westminster model, we also, you have to be an MP to be a minister, obviously. And so you still have the same job. I still work for my constituents. And so I'm balancing it by, it's hard because you get to work harder. You've got an entirely new job on top
of your extra staff?
Your other job. You do get a couple of extra staff, but, you know, that's for the defence side of things. And so that helps, obviously, with resourcing. But to answer your question, my commitment to my community is unchanged. Like, I'm carving out time where I'm spending exclusively to support my constituents and continue to do the work, with the support that they need, whether it's on NDIS matters or, you know, on immigration or visa matters or refugee matters or whatever it might be that I do for my local community, the sport, local sports clubs, local community groups. You just have to be a lot more organised and a lot more disciplined.
And also Peter, advocating for some government support for Joy, which you did.
Yes, that's very true. And, you know, for whether it's radio stations like yours or whether it's community organisations that do such great work in the community, that's the kind of satisfying part of the job, being able to represent and advocate and get results and deliver for them.
Peter, always great to talk to you.
It is.
Thanks for giving us some Saturday morning for us.
We're out of time, and you might want to, if you're in the car or whatever, you might want to keep listening, because in a moment we're going to be speaking with Bruce Wolpe, who I know you, senior Bruce. Fellow at the United States Study Centre. He's going to tell us about the state of affairs in the US. I think it's a bit of a high-level storm, but anyway, we'll see.
Well, have fun.
Great to talk to you, Peter. Take care.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, with Macca and Paul. Stay with us. There is more.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.